Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name is Jackson Inglehurst. Joining me today are the usual suspects in the shape of Julian Roberts. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Enjoying this nice weather in isolation. Jordan Warland, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Chilling in my
Enjoying
house
the
a
weather.
Lot. Yeah.
Day 20 by yourself.
Yeah, it's good. Learning a lot about myself. There's nothing I won't watch. And Tom Walker, welcome.
Hello, Jack. How are we doing?
I'm good, man.
There's nothing I won't watch.
I've got some weight.
Jack's been asked three times how he is now.
No, I know.
But you're good, right?
Yeah,
Tom,
I'm good, man.
You said there's nothing you won't watch, but I have a question.
Oh, no. Yeah, go on.
I have a question. There's been no football for how many weeks? If the only football available to watch live was Peterborough United, would you watch it?
Yeah, give it a bash. Why not? I'm presuming there's
another team involved. I'm not that desperate yet.
What sort of bash?
Peterborough United versus Luton. That would be an interesting one. We're bringing you to a new setup here, a new series of little mini episodes from the pod. We're going to look back to the best players in our lifetime who have graced the Abbey pitch and worn the amber. And go through and do a little profile of them. Then we'll decide between us if they warrant getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. It'll be a nice little series for you to get your teeth into. And Julian Roberts is up first with his nomination due.
Yeah, so I've started with a player who a lot of people might consider a bit of a controversial pick, but I would also say it's a bit of a given. It's Luke Berry. Now, what I thought we'd do to start, instead of just starting from the start and finishing at the bitter end, I thought what we'd do is I've taken inspiration from Jordan last week and I've prepared a little 5-question quiz. Now, this is very, very, it's actually quite hard, this, to be honest. and they're very simple questions, all right? But we'll just do the answers straight off, right? So shout them out if you think you know it. Okay, so against who did Luke Berry make his Cambridge United first team debut?
Jez George would have been in charge.
I've got it.
Have you got it?
Do you know when it is?
Is this like a buzz in your in sort of thing?
Yeah, it's buzzing your
Crawley.
In.
Okay.
No.
Someone shit it. Like Nuneaton or something like that.
It's rushed away. Rushed and away.
That's wrong, mate. Anyone else?
Ooh. I went in all.
So many Dross teams to think of from that time in the conference.
I can give you. It's 2010 April.
Braintree.
No, they were later in the conference, weren't they?
Yeah.
Right. Have another guess.
Are you sure it wasn't Rushton?
According to this website I'm looking at, it wasn't.
What website are you looking at? Is it false LukeBerryFacts.com?
Luke Berry Hub.
No, I'm pretty
Norwich
convinced.
Norwich Victoria? Someone like that?
Salisbury.
Ah, my next guess.
Who did he score his first goal against?
Rushton away.
No. So Tom, Rushton away was 2011. That was the second game he played in.
Ah, okay. First goal. I think I was there. Southport.
Correct. Well played.
Tom,
well played.
Can you
give me the month and the year?
That wasn't the question. Good.
It's a bonus.
November 2011.
It was that same year as Rushton away. So Jez would have been manager. So
correct.
Maybe same month as well. April 2011.
March 2011. Unlucky. Oh. This one's really odd. Who was his first red card against?
Good question.
Gateshead.
Incorrect.
I think it would have been the season after that. I think I know. I think I'm kidding.
We'll say it then. It's kidding. Fucking hell, well played. But it's the season after that. It's two seasons. So September 2012. So 2012-13 season. His last United game?
Leighton Orient at home?
It's not. It's an away game.
Port Vale.
It would have been that year that obviously went to Luton, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
like the first few games.
It was the week before he went to Luton, yeah. As in the week before he made.
Can you tell me what the score was?
I can tell you we won 1-0 and it was away from home.
That's done it. It was Crawley.
Correct. Fucking hell, he's nailed it, lads. To be fair, I don't know if I'd have got any of them. And last one, how many seasons was he top scorer in?
Three.
Two.
I think Jack got it. I think it's three.
It's four.
Wow. Ooh. Fucking hell.
Yeah. So I think that's probably quite a good place to start, right? In that, clearly, I mean, you could tell Luke Berry's ability from the start, and he was always, I think you'd always put him in the mould of a goal-scoring midfielder. And I'd say that's the epitome of Luke Berry, right? He was, if thinking about his career, he was that player that could score goals from anywhere. There were free kicks, there were headers, there were tap-ins. But to take you back to, what was your first memory of Luke Berry playing for United? The first time you thought, all right, there's a real player in there, or the first time you thought, you know, this lad's got some real potential?
Julian, my first memory of Luke Berry was in April 2010 when he made his debut against Salisbury.
Great. And what really stood out for you, Tom?
I think it was his first goal against Southport in March 2011. probably when he made what I thought was his debut, my first literal first memory of him was against Rushden, sort of brought into the team Jez George's first game. Obviously we did end up losing, but I think it was one of those sort of also heroic defeats where it felt like a cloud had been lifted and maybe there was a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and Berry was part and parcel of that, really. I think from then until the end of that season, where we obviously managed to stay up in the conference, which feels like a dark time. He really kind of made his stamp, and that was really when he kind of became what you would say is like quite a regular player in the first team. So I think in terms of first memories and kind of first time where you think maybe we've got a really good player on our hands here, I think it would have been that run, really.
It's interesting because there's definitely an argument to say that it's one of Jez George's biggest successes, right, in his time at United, giving him that time in the first team. And that season you're talking about, Tom, he scored one goal in 14 appearances. But the season after for me, 2011-2012, which was his first season he was top scorer with nine, that was the season for me that he really started to stand out as a footballer and the footballer that he was going to end up becoming. But then to move it forward, I think in a way, if you ask me, the 2013-14 promotion season, which obviously we've done a throwback pod on, I don't know if you agree with this, I almost think he almost went quite unnoticed in that team. He's not the player that people instantly go to when remembering that squad.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And it maybe had something to do with obviously his partner, Tom Champion, as well. And maybe it was the fact that midfield that year just sort of did the job. And it allowed players like obviously Apaya sort of before Christmas, and then after Christmas it was more like Ryan Donaldson to really kind of almost take the headlines, and maybe that's why. But obviously he was still a significant part of that team when he did obviously leave to go to Barnsley. He obviously left quite a hole, he was obviously still top scorer in that year, I think was he in the conference
he was.
Promotion year, and so he obviously still made his impact, but yeah, I think you're right that he probably did to some extent go a little bit under the radar, which is a bit odd when you think that it is potentially one of the best teams that we've watched or most enjoyable teams that we've watched, and he was such a crucial part of it.
And that midfield too, I mean, I know you mentioned it, but that was such an integral role to us getting promoted, and obviously his ability was, as you say, spotted by Barnsley. And at the time of him going to Barnsley, don't know if anyone agrees with me, I had zero bitterness towards him. I thought it was a pretty good move, pretty good career move, a step up. I thought he deserved it. I could understand why he'd made that move.
Wasn't there a load of, around that time, wasn't there, he linked with Hearts at that time? You know, wasn't there a link to the Scottish?
No, that was the second time he left us. He was linked with Scotland, wasn't he? There was no bitterness that he left to go and play for, I think, Barnsley were in the Championship at the time. There was no bitterness about the move that he made. I think the only thing that left a sour taste in the mouth, and it really is nothing to do with him, was the timing. I seem to remember it was quite late in the summer. And I just remember us lining up Portsmouth away. And it was just so bitterly obvious that we were missing that connection between the midfield and the two up top.
Because who was his replacement? I mean, who did we... Eventually George Maris, right? But who did we play in midfield, like that Pompey game? Who lined up in midfield? That's a quiz question.
Great. Well, that's left me stumped.
Didn't Chadwick stay for that first season back in Football League, didn't he? So he would have been an attacking option from midfield. Admittedly, nowhere near as much pace as Luke Berry. Who was that random midfielder? Yeah. I can't remember his name.
Diallo.
Diallo. Was he an attacking midfielder?
No, he was defensive.
Okay.
He was mental. I remember at Wickham away, he like shattered his ACL.
Yeah.
Really terrible injury. And he just like walked off. He'd like scraped his knee or something. Never to be seen of again.
For that Portsmouth game you're talking about, our midfield four was Donaldson, Champion, Liam Hughes, who Chadwick came on for Hughes, and Dunk on the left.
So we would have signed McGeehan just before the Man United game. So that would have been sort of January. But I think the problem was that for the sort of 6 months that preceded that, there wasn't really a replacement for Berry. And actually, as it turned out, Luke Berry's replacement was Luke Berry. Because obviously... he ended up coming back.
Because that season at Barnsley, he scored 2 in 37. And I mean, I can't tell you how well Barnsley did that season. But it was, I mean, my memory's foggy at the time. Was that
more... You've got to remember when he was at Barnsley, I think they were playing him wide left. He wasn't playing behind the striker like he prefers to play. I can't remember who Barnsley had, but they had a better option at number 10.
Yeah, I think the year that he went to Barnsley, I think it was actually League One that they were in, and that was the year that they got promoted. So he was obviously like a non-league player essentially at the time, coming into what was one of the favourites for promotion in League One, and I think he was a bit of a bit part player to be honest for them. And when he did play, like you mentioned, Jordan, he was kind of out of position, just kind of shoved out on the wing, which we actually probably know quite well from his second spell. Wasn't somewhere that he necessarily flourished, even in League Two. So you can imagine that probably they didn't get to quite see the best of Luke Berry at Barnsley, as obviously is kind of evidenced by the fact that he didn't score that many goals. Probably I think maybe it was a case of that he made the move while his stock was high, coming off the back of that promotion year. And maybe it wasn't the best informed decision in the end. Maybe what might have suited him better was maybe not even staying, but just playing somewhere where he was going to get guaranteed game time. And maybe that step up two leagues might not have been the best idea at the time. Perhaps maybe even if it was just like a better League Two team that he moved to, it might have suited him a bit better. And maybe the progression might have been a bit more, it might have had a bit of a better flow rather than sort of up and down and then up again. A strange time at Barnsley probably for him.
It's interesting as well to look at when he did come back, the season after his second season back on his second spell was the season that you really remember Luke Berry playing at his absolute best, that 2016-17 season. And there's one game in particular that I wanted to point out, which is probably the obvious one, which is Coventry at home in the Cup, score of 4. And at this point, he was just running games. He was absolutely exceptional that season. He scored 22 in the league. Oh, sorry, no, that was in all competitions. But he really was at that point, definitely one of the best players, definitely our best player, one of the best players in the league. And obviously what then came to pass afterwards was almost what you're talking about, Tom, in that he made... It's kind of painful to say it, but he made a step to Luton, to a team that was favourites for promotion with a bit more money, with a very good squad. And time has told that it's a very sensible move what he's made, that he's now a Championship footballer. And that was that's like the sort of small gradual step that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. Obviously, we look back, and probably at the time, it didn't feel that way. let's be honest. But yeah, I think sometimes with like player development, just generally, you wonder whether it's best to make that big step and obviously go to the kind of big club straight away, or whether it's best to kind of grow with a team. And obviously Luton is very much that option. Like Jack, you obviously mentioned some of the links to Scotland. So obviously, like I can't remember if it was Hearts or Hibernian, but certainly linked with a big club in Scotland. Was also linked with a couple of big clubs in England, I think it was Portsmouth and Millwall, I think it was as well. Obviously those moves didn't quite work out and didn't quite happen. And then obviously Luton came in, and I guess what it represented for him was firstly a chance to not play for Cambridge. He probably felt that he'd earned a move away somewhere following that season. And what it represented was obviously the opportunity to firstly get another promotion under your belt, because I think they were pretty much nailed on for promotion before the season even started. And then, they go into League One and obviously continue to rise. And yeah, like you say, it's one that's worked out pretty well for him.
Can I just say, fuck Hearts and fuck Hibs. They're not big clubs. Scottish Prem is a joke. But... It was an interesting one that season that led to that sort of move away, because I think that was the first time we properly saw him playing number 10 for Cambridge United for like a prolonged period of time. I think Derry flirted with the idea of playing him wide at some points as well, and I think that ultimately was what kind of made the move away happen a little bit quicker. He didn't like playing out of position. But yeah, he really benefited from having Uche up top as well, to sort of allow him to have that space and a bit of freedom away from defenders.
Is there any other games that people remember in just before we talk about the reaction to his move away, his final move away? Is there any particular games that you have particular fond memories of?
Yeah, I was just going to quickly just kind of add to what Jordan said, just very briefly, which, like, obviously talked about him moving at number 10. And I think during his second spell, he actually played in quite a lot of different roles for us. And obviously, I think when he came back from Barnsley, I think it was Richard Money that signed him back and, sort of had him in, like, defensive midfield. And I think it seemed pretty clear to most people that he needed to play at that number 10. And as soon as he kind of moved into that position, just really started to flourish, didn't he? In terms of specific games, obviously Coventry is the one that, really kind of stands out. Four goals in the game is pretty spectacular. I think of Portsmouth away in the same year for some reason. A game that we didn't win. We lost 2-1. But he scored one free kick, which was an absolute blinder. And then about 2 minutes later, right at the end of the game, to rescue a point out of it, he had pretty much the same free kick, but he was saved pretty well by Ford. And I think it was at that point you realise that you've got a player who's just got a bit of everything here, who takes set pieces. Yeah. Well, we found that out the next year, didn't we? Someone who obviously had, the ability to take set pieces, could score goals with his head, could score goals with his feet. A very good player. So that's one that weirdly sticks in my mind, but I'm not absolutely sure why.
Tom, talking of South Coast teams that start with P, didn't you two go to Plymouth away? Didn't he score a winner there in like the pissing rain?
That was the year.
That stands out as being like an incredible result.
They blamed it on algae that year. Do you remember that? They blamed the pitch on... That was that year, right, that you're talking about. It's called the winner.
We won 2-1. It was December 2015. Yeah. But I don't know the algae story.
Plymouth algae.
So Plymouth afterwards came out and said that I forget exactly. They said that the pitch had been infested with moss and algae, and it caused it to be especially slippy. I can't remember. You don't remember the story?
So I've got it here. So we, like you quite rightly say, Jordan, went to Plymouth, who were, I think at the time one of the teams at the top of League Two, in December 2015. We got a really good result there. Obviously beat them 2-1. Barry scored the winner, a really good finish. I think it's from sort of the edge of the box, curled into the top corner. Derek Adams, the then Plymouth manager, he basically blamed the result and the goal, which obviously Barry scored, on a late slip by defender Peter Hartley, which was caused by the amount of algae that's on the pitch. He said that there's been an algae on the pitch all week, has to be treated, and hopefully that will be sorted in the week. That's the reason for his slip. And he said that they're getting experts in to come and sort it out. They've taken soil samples, and yeah, they're going to try and sort it out that way. It was bizarre, to be honest. But going off beat a little bit, I think it was one of the, in a series of kind of quite strange excuses that he came out with. I seem to remember him at some point making Plymouth play in a different colour at home because he felt they blended in with the seats too much. But yeah, a little bit off base.
Tom talked about the free kick at Portsmouth. After this pod is finished, treat yourself on YouTube and look up his free kick against Blackpool away. Do you remember that? I think it was the same season.
Yeah.
It was October 2016, according
to
YouTube.
It would have been the same season as that, yeah.
He scored a couple of free kicks. He never did that early days. I can't remember him in the conference taking free kicks and scoring them. But, yeah, his second kind of period with us, he did start taking free kicks. But, yeah, he scored a couple of brilliant ones. But I think the Blackpool one rivals the Portsmouth one. I think it's about 25 yards out, gives the keeper no chance. Yeah, terrific. And then on the subject of the beautiful, we should probably talk about the ugly as well. I seem to remember Luke Berry scored goals by charging down goalkeepers. Was that Berry?
Yeah. Against Notts County.
Twice.
Yeah.
That was pretty remarkable. Repeating there. Well done, everyone.
Yeah. Good that we don't speak over each other there at all. That's good. I mean, he really could. When you think back, he scored so many different types of goals. He's such a useful player. I always remember Crew away when he scored twice that same season as the Blackpool game, same season as the Plymouth game.
Early in my tenure as a Cambridge United fan, it's great having cameras and not being in the studio. I really enjoy this. Early in my tenure as a Cambridge United fan, I remember being really astonished about how good Berry was in the air. Such a small player. To have him coming in like late run into the box and be, you know, out jumping defenders, you know, 4 or 5 inches taller than him, was a really interesting thing to see, especially at conference level when I first started and then, you know, after that. So, yeah, that's a really good skill to have as a shorter player.
Yeah, and I think that kind of feeds into something I mentioned earlier, which is that certainly towards the end of that second spell, he did just become like an incredibly like rounded footballer. One of those players who sort of had everything. And I think the goals that you mentioned, Jordan, about charging keepers down pretty much summed him up as a footballer. Extremely hard working, and it's always likely that if you do chase those lost causes, you're going to score goals like that. There was one at Exeter as well. I'm not sure if you guys can recall that, where he did something similar. It didn't rebound straight off him, but he charged the keeper down, won it and scored. And that season is the kind of, probably in recent years, the best individual season that I've seen from a Cambridge player. You know, to score so many goals, to have such an impact sort of elsewhere in the team as well, was pretty remarkable, really.
So what did we all think at the end of that season in terms of how much money we thought we would get for Luke Berry? So to put it into kind of perspective, not long before, I think Oxford sold... Was his name Kemar Roof? I think they sold him to Leeds for like $3 million. And I think Luton sold McGeehan for like over $1 million. And I'm not going to say that Luke Berry's better than both those players, but I kind of, that got the hope up that we would be seeing top dollar for him. And then it just never happened.
Yeah. What I would say is that you have to take all of like the context into account here, because I think when you start saying that you're expecting sort of like a seven-figure fee for a League Two player, you can sound a little bit crazy. But you have to take into context that he scored, I think, Gene, you mentioned sort of more than 20 goals from midfield. He still had 2 years left on his contract, and there were some pretty big clubs rumoured to be in for him. So with that in mind, exactly. Well, yeah, fair enough. you know, with that in mind, the ball was very much in our court to really just kind of put our foot down and say, unless you come in with an offer which is ridiculous and which is crazy, then he's not going to go. And you know, I mentioned about his sort of work rate and attitude, it seemed to me like he was a sort of player who would maybe be disappointed he didn't get his move, but it wouldn't necessarily affect how he played and the sort of effort that he was putting in, because that's kind of how he was as a player. But the way that I see that the transfer market should work is that players don't go for what they're worth, they go for what they're worth to you as a football club. And at that time, coming off the back of that season, I very much thought and was pretty not confident, but quite hopeful in the fact that we would be able to get, if he did leave, at least £1 million for him, given the context of what you've mentioned, Jordan, and given what I've mentioned there.
This was the biggest transfer fuck-up by Cambridge United since Dave Kitson. I think Kitson got let go for a couple hundred grand when he was worth easily more. And then what, a decade later, classic Cambridge United, let a player go for less than what they're worth.
So I think this transfer is particularly indicative of a lot of the resentment and a lot of the sort of negative feeling a lot of people have towards the club and our growth. And I just scrolled back through the message board earlier to when it was just before it was announced, when it seemed pretty clear that he was going to Luton. There's a very interesting post here that I thought, so this is August 24th, 2017. So what, pretty much 3 years ago. And his paragraph, sick and tired of the bullshit promise of a club developing when in fact we have a shite squad, a backroom staff that looks more like a film credit than a football team, and some painted bogs. Other teams have taken their windfalls from big cup draws and gone on and had a real crack at it. We have some painted bogs that still smell rancid and more corporate dining tables while we force lifelong youth fans out of their seats that have occupied 40 years to bring more plastic corporates in. Blah, blah. I think the point is, and it's something that's still valid, is this small club mentality, and we didn't get... We like exactly like you say, Tom, we didn't put our foot down enough on that transfer. It felt a lot like we got rolled over by a team that we should really be challenging. We should really have the ambitious mindset to be on a par and battling with Luton. That is really what we should be doing. And we clearly didn't with this transfer.
Do you think that it's a little bit like, it's just kind of typical, and should Cambridge be battling with Luton? Are they really, you know, that size of team, or should they be where they are and battling to stay in League Two? I know we're kind of digressing away from Luke Berry, and Luke Berry went on to better things and made a very shrewd footballing move, but I wonder about Cambridge United and, you know, transfers like this. You say it's indicative of that small club mentality. Well, maybe Cambridge have shoehorned them and shelved themselves as a small club, and I don't want to, you know, alienate myself to all of the fans, but I start to think, is that the case?
Well, I think historically Luton are probably a much bigger club than us. They've been in higher leagues than us for longer periods of times and won trophies and so forth. But I think when we were planning this pod, we talked about Luke being a controversial inductee to the Hall of Fame. And I think for some people it was controversial because I seem to remember that period was a lot of, well, at the time, everyone seemed to think that Luke Berry was the one pushing ahead with trying to get his move away from the club. And I think that, at the time and even still a few years on, people are still quite bitter about that, you know, that someone doesn't want to be at your club. But I just think back to that point and think, like Tom was saying, we had 2 years on his contract left. If he wanted to go full player power and strike and whatnot, we could have dumped him in the reserves for a few weeks or a few months, and then sort of taught him a lesson to about sticking with us. And then I think long term, I don't think Sean Derry lasts much longer. So we could have had a new manager in who could have brought Berry back into the squad. And yeah, it could have been a fucking fairy tale.
Yeah, I think just kind of following on from something that Jack said, and I think I probably agree with Julian on the point that he made, was that like we should be careful not to make it a discussion about whether Cambridge are the same size club as Luton. Because obviously we're not historically, like we're not now, we haven't ever been really, although we shared the same division for a couple of years. But I think the point that Julian's making, which is absolutely spot on, is that like, you know, in terms of competing with the club, I think what he means, and correct me if I'm wrong, Julian, but is that like we should have been bullied by a club that are in the same division as us into letting our best player go, our biggest asset go, for about a quarter of what he's actually worth. And like, I think towards the end of that window, like I said previously, I mean, my own opinion is that it just became more about getting a move away than it did specifically to Luton. And as soon as there was a hint of interest, I think he was just like, let's just get this done. But I think what Jordan says there as well is absolutely right in that, you know, the ball was completely in our court. We had 2 years left on his contract. And if it was a case of saying, look, you can kick and make a fuss about it, you can sit in the reserves and we'll sell you in January, but like we're not going to lose out because we're not going to get a lower fee from selling you when you've got 2 years or 18 months left on your contract. And if you're going to sell them for fuck all anyway, then it doesn't really matter, does it? But I think the point that has to be made is that obviously there was a player who, in terms of ability, was a long way above Cambridge realistically, and in terms of ambition was probably significantly ahead of us as well. And it came at a time where I think if we look back to the signings that we made the summer that he left, a lot of fans, myself included, thought, is this a club that's really going for it, or is this a club that actually is actually fine being in mid-table? And if you're a Luke Berry who's coming off the back of a 22 goal season, I think you're well within your rights to push ahead with a move to a club like Luton, regardless of the league they're in, to you know, to firstly get a better wage for yourself, because I'm sure that they did pay a better wage, you know, as a footballer at the end of the day, his short career, all that. But also in terms of ambition, they're a club who were going to get promoted and maybe again, and that's obviously how it turned out.
Well, I mean, taking it back to Berry, I don't, for all that it was controversial end to his career, and you know, he had two moves away from Cambridge to try and better his career. Moving on, you know, if you've had more than 200 appearances for a club and, you know, scored more than 50 goals for them, you've got to be, you know, considered pretty heroic in that sense. And he has gone on to have a good career with Luton, even after a pretty horrendous injury. With that Cambridge United career that he's had, surely that kind of sets him up to be, you know, considered a bit of a legend, no matter what your opinion on the move is, not to lose sight of all the good he did.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's why, while this is controversial and while all of these points that we've made are absolutely spot on, in terms of, you know, the size of the clubs and how this move is so frustrating for United fans, et cetera, et cetera. I think if you're looking at him as a footballer and what he gave to United, top scorer in our promotion season, that's obviously, we've spoken about that season, fantastic footballer, scored goals, all sorts of different goals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For me, regardless of anything, he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. So let's vote on it. Jordan, yes or no?
On the basis of being a youth team graduate, one of our own, he was the brightest spark for at least a decade. Despite the heartbreak, I think he was our top goal scorer for the last decade. It's a yes.
Tom Walker.
Yeah, I think for the same reasons. Although maybe if we'd done this podcast in another couple of years, it might be a more straightforward decision.
He's coming back for a third spell. I fear
it's still to some extent through gritted teeth, but yeah, I think based on what he achieved for us, what he basically did for the club, yeah, I think so.
And Jack's with the list.
Yeah, you don't get England C caps with being a rubbish player. So for me, he's absolutely got to go in into the Hall of Fame just on that.
You tell that to Jonathan Edge.
Well, Luke Berry, inducted into the UTAS Hall of Fame, the inaugural inductee. That was great, lads. Let's do it again soon.
Great first episode and great first inductee into the Hall of Fame. Tom Walker, thank you for your expert analysis there.
Thanks very much, Jack. Always welcome.
Jordan Warland, thank you for coming.
Thanks for the memories, Luke.
And Julian Roberts, thanks for the great first inductee to the Hall of Fame.
Cheers, lads.
Banana.
Great outro, mate. You've had 45 minutes to plan that.